welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 95. For this episode, we're going all the way back to the Sega Genesis and the Mega Drive for some ninja action with Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master, or if you're in Japan, Super Shinobi 2. Oh man, why has it got to be so confusing? But to make sense of all of this, I have Sega Genesis expert and historian Greg Seward of the Player One podcast and Generation 16 with me. Greg, thank you so much for helping me sort all this out.
My pleasure.
And of course, we're not doing, you know, Revenge of Shinobi. We're not doing Shadow Dancer. We're doing Shinobi 3.
Yeah. It's the sequel to the pseudo sequel to the original arcade game.
Yes, and we're going to talk all about this because one of the things that I love so much about this franchise is just how confusing it can all be if you want to figure, like, you want to do Zelda chronology, let's do Shinobi chronology and like lining up arcade versions. Joe is just very experienced. So before we get into that, the first thing I want to hit on is if you didn't tune in last week, you should really go back because we had a really cool event where we did a pre and post show for the Nintendo Switch event with myself, with Greg, with CJ, and Joshua Hillier. So go back one episode and check that out because I don't know if you know this, but Nintendo has a new console coming out on March 3rd and a brand new Zelda game to go along with it. And I think we had some interesting reactions, and it's always great to kind of digest on the stuff a little bit more, but I think Greg is holding off. I got one pre-ordered for my flight to Japan, but you know, it's a very divisive console right now, but only time will tell, or time will show us if it will be a success in the market. Of course, you guys did an episode of Player One podcast a couple days ago, also following up on all that news and had some more time to digest and give some more like reasoned reactions to it, because I know in the moment we can be very passionate about these sure. New consoles.
There's nothing more exciting than new video game hardware.
Totally. Like, God, I look forward to this every single time, even if it's 1:30 in the morning that we're talking about it. But like I said, we're going to be talking about Shinobi 3. The last thing I want to mention is, and I did this for also the FitCast, my other podcast that I do, because, you know, again, this is kind of a world of where everyone kind of knows everything about me. But if you don't follow me on social media and stuff like that, I've actually, I'm departing my current position at Mike Polster and the Edition, where I've been for 7.5 years, and departing the companies and really more or less going at it on my own. I'm betting on myself and betting on, you know, these shows that I believe in so much, and I hope the audience does as well. So if you have had interest in the past to become a Patreon supporter and make a donation through PayPal, this would probably be the best time to do it, because most of my income is going to be coming from these shows. And I think you'll see over the next coming weeks and months with the new content that I want to produce for Back in My Play that you know, that money is going to be going to some efforts to do some really, really cool stuff. So thank you as well to all the current Patreons. You guys have about a 28-minute extra segment at the end where we talk about getting HDMI modded 3DSs, talking a little bit more about Nintendo Switch, talking about Dragon Quest VIII, Yakuza 0, lots of great stuff in that segment. So thank you so much for letting me talk about that for a second. But we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to be right back with the history of Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master. Stick around. All right, so I'm going to do my best to keep this history segment rather short, and we're going to get to talking about the game. But the problem with trying to keep it short is this game has an incredibly interesting history and a great development story. But We always get to start with the release dates for this game. They came out rather close in terms of the release dates for North America and Japan. Coming out first in Japan on July 23rd, 1993. So it's a relatively late Sega Genesis game, I guess. That feels like rather late.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into it later when they actually talk about the game, but I think just looking at the game, you can tell that it's a relatively late Genesis game.
It's a good-looking game, and off in North America, August 22nd, 1993, the summer of Shinobi, they called it. The game was developed by Megasoft, published by Sega, and now we're going to talk a little bit about the development stuff, because I didn't know any of this stuff before going back and doing the research for the show, but really, really interesting stuff, and it seems like a lot of the later Sega Genesis games always had very fascinating development histories with the companies that Sega was working with, and also how some of these games were literally on the fence between Genesis games, Sega CD games, 32X games, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But we'll start with this. Shinobi 3 was originally set to be released in 1992. Several gaming magazines, including GamePro, Greg Jeffson.
No, sorry.
No, just taking a breath, all right? Including GamePro, Mean Machines, Sega, and Computer and Video Games. Those magazines gave previews and even reviews of the game. They had, quote-unquote, final code. They showed pictures of levels, enemies, artwork, and special moves, which were not seen in the final version at all. And this is something that was, not incredibly uncommon back in the day, where, magazines would get quote-unquote final bills. They were getting review copies of the game, and then developers would either completely scrap the game or rework it all together. Did this ever happen when you were in, the journalism side of things, where you ever got a game that ended up just completely not coming out, or just got what was the game? It was what's the game I'm thinking of? Not Time Splitters, but Time.
I don't know.
It was a 360 game. It was originally going to be on Xbox, but it ended up coming out on 360. I forget.
Oh, we flirted with this a little bit. Although I don't remember a time while I was there where we actually get something that was called review code. But you're right. It was really common because of the lead times for magazines that you had code in your hands that wasn't necessarily final. Mm-hmm. I can remember a Game Boy Advance game. It was I forget what it was called, but it was kind of like a Gran Turismo style racer that we had to re-review because they had given us Japanese code and had not told us that they were going to take the battery out of the game. So
what?
It turned into this password system that mm-hmm. we never mentioned once in the review because we had no idea it was going to happen. There was another thing that happened during the time that I was there, but it didn't happen to EGM. It was actually, I think, GamePro that reviewed Half-Life for the Dreamcast.
That's right.
But that was another game that was complete enough that they had been told it was reviewable, and then suddenly it never came out.
And hey, we're totally going to fix those 3-minute load times in between sections. Mm-hmm. The game that I was thinking of was Time Shift. And do you remember this?
I don't remember Time Shift.
Okay, Time Shift was a game that was originally going to come out in, I think it was 2006. Or something like that on the original Xbox, but it actually got delayed twice, and then it changed publishers, and then it eventually came out in 2007 on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and it was okay. It was, believe it or not, published by Sierra. Sierra is a company that always goes in and out of video game publishing and gets moved around and all that stuff.
Yeah, that name gets used a lot. There was one game that I really wish I still had the original preview copy of, and that was Eco. The original Eco, the preview copy that I used to write a big preview for it in EGM, I'll have to go find the screenshots because I remember it being quite noticeably different than what we got as final code.
Cool.
But again, that was called preview copy up front. But the thing about Shinobi 3 that I think is really fascinating, all that aside, the fact that you would get final or quote unquote final code that was reviewable. Mm-hmm. There was a reason why it wasn't always exactly final. But with Shinobi 3, it was done. It was done. It was ready to release, and Sega made the really ballsy move of scrapping the entire game and starting again from scratch, pretty much.
Yeah.
They reworked every single level.
Exactly. like you said, they're unsatisfied with it. So they put the game back into development to improve it. And it was finally released in 1993, and many game features seen earlier were missing. New ones took their place, and a beta version of the original version of the game was eventually leaked, and you can actually find that ROM image if you do want to play the, like, I don't know, what would you call it? It's like almost Shinobi 2.5.
Version 0.1?
Yeah, or something like that. But yeah, it's like, you know, almost like the original Resident Evil 4, how that got reworked. Right. And even Resident Evil 2. Capcom had a history of that with that series. It's just fun to think about that as we get a new one. In what, a week, we get a new Resident Evil game. So,
God, I can't believe that.
This game has been, like many Sega games, Sega's really good at just putting their games on every single piece of hardware that is capable of displaying video. So we got this collection on the PlayStation 2, on the PlayStation Portable, of course, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection, which is a really good package on the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. Of course, it came out on the Wii's Virtual Console in 2007 and on Steam in 2010, even the iPhone in 2011.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to be talking about mostly today is on the Nintendo 3DS as a 3D classic that Sega just does an incredible job of. So we'll be talking about that in a bit. But yeah, very interesting history. And even if you just want to save yourself from downloading the ROM, you can actually go on YouTube and you can watch people play through the earlier version of the game. But it's just, it seems like it was for the better.
Yeah, it was. And actually, I want to say one thing, too. You mentioned Megasoft. Another thing that I think is really interesting is Megasoft actually started as a company called Whiteboard. And they made their name making Mahjong games, of all things.
Sometimes you just need to kill stuff within your games. You can't just keep putting tiles down.
Yeah, Mahjong games. Okay, let's make one of the best side-scrolling action games on the system.
Very, very cool. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get some more really good music from this game. You know, perhaps not Yuzo Koshiro, but it's still pretty damn good. Stick around. We'll be right back. We're going all the way back to 1993. I was lucky enough to have a Super Nintendo, not a Sega Genesis, though, so I was not playing this game when it originally came out, but Greg, Sega Genesis Seward, is this something that you had the slip for at your local Toys R Us? You brought that thing to the counter and said, yo, man, I need some ninja fighting action.
We didn't have Toys R Us here, but yes, this was one of the games that I was really looking forward to in 1992.
Where did you buy your games in 1992 and 93?
They were locally owned shops, okay. Usually. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I vividly remember, I think Game Fan was actually the magazine that I was reading at the time, and they had that 1992 version you were talking about. They had a huge spread, like with long, you know, those long screenshot maps that magazines would do back in the day. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, just to get this great look and then complete silence. And then it came out mid-1993 and it was a completely different game. But it was still amazing. And yeah, I mean, Shinobi was on. Anybody who was a Sega fan, especially those of us who had bought the system in the, you know, very early, like, 90s or 1990, 1991, because Revenge of Shinobi was a marquee title
showcase
for the system.
Showcase,
right? Yeah, I mean, it was one of the most impressive early games for the system. The music didn't hurt either. The Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack. Oh my God. But I mean, the graphics were incredible and the gameplay was incredible. You know, it was just, there was nothing not to like about that game. So when we had gotten Shadow Dancer, but again, you want to talk about the weird timeline. Shadow Dancer kind of fits into a different timeline. But
and that's
this,
a cool,
you know,
game too. We'll definitely do that game in the future.
It is. But the thing is like this one was being sold as, this is actually the actual sequel to Revenge of Shinobi.
Because, Super like Shinobi said, 2.
Super Shinobi in Japan. Revenge of Shinobi was Super Shinobi in Japan. Mm-hmm. Shinobi 3 was Super Shinobi 2 in Japan. So this was the actual follow-up. So, I mean, yeah, there was never a moment where we weren't going to play it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's amazing. 1993 was an amazing year for Genesis games.
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, you mentioned it as like, what, it's one of those titles that you use to, you know, compete on the playground against the Nintendo people. When they show you, you know, Super Mario and Mario Kart and Metroid, like, you can be, yeah, we got real adult games. Sorry. We got Streets of Rage. We have Revenge of Shinobi. We have, you know, Shinobi 3. Like, we have games that are just so hardcore and that live up to the just ridiculously rock hard Sega advertisements of the day. And I could totally see why, even playing through this, you know, today on a 3DS, like, it is a badass game. Like, there is, and it plays, and I'm kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but I like, the best thing I can say about this game is that it is a Sega Genesis ass Sega game. Like, it, like, is spewing Sega Genesis. It is, if I needed to put, like, under the definition of Sega Genesis, like, this is one of the games I would put there because of just, like, the look, the sound, the gameplay, the even all the way down to how the character moves. Like, it just feels like a Sega Genesis game, which is, like, nuts.
It really sits alongside something like Gunstar Heroes, Contra Hardcore,
exactly,
and Rocket Knight Adventures. Like, those games are kind of, when you look at, like, okay, what's a Sega game, a Genesis game at the peak of the system, and these are those games, and it nestles in just perfectly with those games. Like, from a sort of a special effects standpoint, from a gameplay standpoint, from a sound standpoint, this game sounds fantastic.
And it,
I mean,
and
it sounds so good.
And it sounds so good, but like specifically the sound effects. Like, the sound effects are Sega Genesis. Like,
the sample, they are, but the sampling is great. I mean, it's better than you hear on a lot of other Genesis games.
I would agree with that, and I think it's one of the best soundtracks on the console. Like, the sound, like, you know, I mean, you guys are going to hear it throughout the show, but you cannot just feel like, I want to, you know, rip some dudes up with some ninjutsu action, although it's not really ninjutsu that you're going to use. This was a really interesting time of 93, because you're also seeing the Super Nintendo just really hitting its stride with just, like, banger after banger, and they had a ridiculous lineup, and it was, you know, when you started to see Sega, like, almost like, all right, well, we need to just make A, great games, and then B, that's when they were starting to flirt with the additional add-ons as well. Like, it was in full effect.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. This is 1993, and I'm just looking up. I mean, we're still a year out from Donkey Kong Country, but 1993 was the point where Sega and Nintendo were neck and neck in the market. They were taking each other super seriously. I mean, Sega had been for quite a while. Nintendo didn't really pay attention to Sega because they didn't think they had to at the beginning. But, like, the Super Nintendo had picked up steam. The Genesis was right at its peak.
They were both both firing on all cylinders, because that's when you also got all those great Konami games. Yeah.
93-94 was an amazing year to be into video game. Amazing years to be into video games. They were the pinnacle of the 16-bit years.
Yeah, and it's like, just, I was kind of pulling this up myself, because, you know, it was, the more and more I thought about it, the 1993, like, when we're talking games like Super Metroid, we're talking about, you know, games that really almost
define a generation.
They defined a generation, and they defined 16-bit gaming all the way into 2017 today, where people are emulating it in other games, which it just shows, it was like almost the one of the most important periods of innovation and competition and so much. Like, it's just, it's probably like maybe the best year of that generation.
I think you're right. And that is kind of, that's a great example of what I'm talking about. The competition bred so much innovation on both sides. I mean, the games are as good on both systems as they were because of the fact that the two systems were neck and neck. Right. Totally. They were very different systems with very different strengths. So both companies and all their third parties were learning to really adapt to those strengths and just doing some amazing work. Plus, you've also got sort of, you know, you're moving into like the whole Sega CD era as well. And, you know, like there was that element happening too. But yeah, I mean, the competition was incredible. And it was the same thing, even it was all around across all genres. Like you look at even what Electronic Arts was doing this year. Releasing all their 90, like NHL 94, Madden 94,
yeah.
Four player adapters were becoming a thing right around now as well. I mean, you know, like everything was just hitting right at the same time.
We got Super FX chip games. We got Star Fox, man. Like
you had Virtual Racer coming on the Genesis as well.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it was an amazing time. Amazing time. And this game is one of those showpieces.
Yeah. Sonic CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. Yep.
Mega Man 6. I'm just kidding. But hey, Mega Man 6 is coming up very soon on this show. I've been in touch with your friend and my friend Phil Theobald to get that together.
That game.
Oh, it's so good. I really love Mega Man 6. But I digress. But I think it's always fun to also like look back at the like the year and the months that these games came out, because it gives you some context and also just shows how. Like, we look back on this stuff rather fondly, right? You know, maybe with some rose-tinted glasses, but, God, we're also getting NBA Jam that year. We're getting Mortal Kombat 2. Like, it was just a ridiculous year for games, very much like last year was for the current generation of consoles. So did you like, play through this back then? And, like, yep, this is an incredible game. This is one of those games that, you know, Sega is going to want to, in, I don't know, 20 years, want to make a 3D classic of on future hardware.
I mean, I never looked at it from that perspective, but yeah, I mean, I had a couple of friends. We were all very hardcore Genesis people, and any major AAA release, we went nuts over, and this was one of them.
It's a great game, and we're going to get into it in depth in the next segment, because we're going to talk about, oh man, this game holds up today, folks. Get your 3DSs ready, because that's probably going to be the best way to play. Stick around. We'll be right back. We made it back to 2017, and of course, instead of playing the latest in PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and PC games, we're playing old Sega Genesis games, but we're playing it on, or at least I played it on current, somewhat still current generation hardware on the Nintendo 3DS with the Awesome City Sega 3D Classics Collection, which right now you can pick up this game on Virtual Console, the eShop, for $5.99 plus tax. Plus, it's also available in the Fukuoka collection in Japan on Volume 3, which, again, they're still super lucky. We got Volume 2 here in the States as kind of Volume 1, but
yeah.
In Japan, they even released a triple pack, which is so awesome. So you can get like all, I guess, 18 or 20 of these 3D Classics games.
That's nuts.
And like for $60 or $70. It's really, really great. Greg, did you play through this on a 3DS or on a Genesis?
Oh, Genesis.
Do you have the 3DS version?
No, I don't, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, like I say, but I've got the cartridge version.
you got a card. But see, the cool thing, when, and again, I don't Like, you guys know I always sometimes have divisive opinions on the 3DS, but when you get access to these 3D classics, the amount of customization that you get to have on these ROMs is ridiculous, including allowing you to use the international or like the US or the Japanese version of the game. You can do button mapping. You can, you know, change how the 3D effect looks, and you can even change how you want to emulate it. Like, you can emulate it on Model 1 hardware or Model 2 hardware, which is just the kind of customization a crazy person like me likes to have. And of course, you can also do save states as you play through it. So, Greg, I've never played through this game until, like, I literally bought it this week and played through it. So I must say, I love this game. This game is so good.
Yeah, I love the fact that Revenge of Shinobi is one of my favorite games. Don't get me wrong, but that was pretty much just an action game, you know, where you happen to be playing as a ninja. This game, their focus is so much more on speed and versatility, and Joe Musashi has so many more moves. Like, I love that you can run through a lot of places, and he's got these great attacks when you're running. Yep. He's still got the somersault jump, the diving kick.
Yo, man,
awesome.
That jump.
The wall jump.
Yep, I got.
Just it opens up so many different options as you're going through the levels, and also being able to hand over hand, using the shuriken as to hold yourself up in the ceilings and go hand over hand. Like, there's just so many. He's so versatile now, and the game it's awesome because of it.
Yeah, let me set the stage, because you basically start out in like a forest, and the first thing that stands out is the parallax scrolling. Like,
oh my god, it just goes on forever.
Exactly, there's like what three levels of parallax scrolling going on in the background. But it's not only that, but like the background animations, it's, you know, walking through this forest and having the leaves fly by you. Yep. from the wind. Like, it really just sets the tone well, and you know, you just start firing off shurikens, and I didn't play this game in the past, and I didn't read the instructions, and I don't even know that they're actually I should probably look. I bet there are instructions if you go to the, yeah, there is, if you go to the home menu. But I didn't realize you had all these moves until I kind of stumbled upon them as I was either hitting an obstacle where I needed to do like a wall jump, which, yeah, makes sense. Wall jump is pretty universal when it comes to video games. Mm-hmm. And I knew of the double jump, which I hate the double jump. I'm sorry, but I hate the double jump in Shinobi games.
It's
sucks.
Always the timing of it is just weird enough that it makes it hard to do.
It is the equivalent of the wall jump in Super Metroid in terms of like difficulty and timing, like, for real. But
no, you're not wrong.
So what I do want to say is, like, again, I kind of like wrote notes down, like, one of the biggest things were, you know, depth of field, and round one being relatively simple. And actually, most of this game is relatively easy until you hit a couple rather big, would you call them just like steep inclines in difficulty?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe this is definitely an easier game than Revenge of Shinobi.
Oh, it's so much easier.
But it does, and it's got a nice sort of difficulty curve. But yeah, there are some spikes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this, and I'm going to kind of run through a couple of these things. But I think the cool thing about this game is also the, you know, it is not the same game throughout. Like, even you go into round two, you're riding a horse, and yeah, you're like almost getting a Sunset Riders like experience in that. I know it's round two, but that second stage titled Secret Entry, where, again, they're using that parallax scrolling. They're using the depth of field where you see guys running in. And a lot of like cool vertical shooters will do this too, like when enemies are coming from below, and then they'll kind of like fly all the way onto the top of the screen. Exactly, yeah. Off the screen, and then come back on, obviously on the same level as you. They do the same thing, but just going side to side with Shinobi 3. So you get to see like ninjas like that are sprinting at superhuman speeds off the screen and then coming back on. And the cool thing about this is, like, there's the game gives you a lot of help. Like, it will even give you like caution signs when you need to make sure you're going to have to jump in a second or something like that. But I'm actually like, the problem is I was actually writing down these notes while I was at the DMV and playing this game while waiting to get my license renewed. But yeah, the couple things that I was writing down is like, even right after that horse scene, you have your obligatory and required as a 16-bit game elevator stage. Because you got to have it, Greg.
Mm-hmm. With, again, a ridiculous amount of parallax scrolling going on behind you.
Yes, and this is one of the things that probably reading the instructions would have been super valuable, or just something that I kind of stumbled on. But like, I was getting serious John McClane vibes for those poor guys crawling through the vents and just like, dude, I got a shuriken just waiting for your face and you're going to explode. And even though I had to go through that stage a couple different times, it was just kind of super satisfying to just know that those guys were going to come and I was going to line up and end their lives. But
yeah, I mean, getting the timing right on those is great, because it's not at the height of your jump, but like,
right,
if you just sort of, yeah, if you just jump at just the right time, you fire one shuriken into that spot, you'll just catch them as they come on screen, and it's super satisfying.
So this is where I came into some what I wrote down as elevator action issues, because there's a portion of the level where you're on an elevator and you start running into obstacles and you'll get crushed by said obstacles unless you avoid them. And what I didn't realize is there's actually like these bars that go across, again, you know, multiple layers of sprites going on here, where you can actually grab onto them. But I did not realize that you can grapple onto them. Thank you. Yep. So what I was doing instead was doing wall jumps and double jumps.
That's tough.
That was tough. So I kept getting frustrated. And there's a certain part where you would basically need to do like an angled, like almost like a half circle double jump that's curved. And I'm like, I just don't, like, I'm stuck here. Like, I cannot get past this part. And I went on YouTube, which is so much better than back in 1993, because you're like, oh, well, that's how you get past that part. And then I'm like, oh God, the guy's holding on to the pipes. I'm an idiot. So I got through that part, and I don't know. How do you feel about those? I think the first, like, let's say the first two bosses are like, you could just spam and get through them, right?
You can, yeah. I mean, with the first boss, I found it more fun to do drop or diving kicks on them.
Totally. And actually, one of the things that I wrote down here during that elevator portion, this game is super forgiving. I don't know if it's like this in the Genesis version or just in the 3DS version, but like, you get unlimited continues, and you can continue from the exact last checkpoint.
I really don't remember if that's what was happening while I was playing. I wasn't paying close enough attention to that.
Well, you're probably too good at the game, so wasn't really.
Well, I mean, one thing I will say is that, I mean, you know, I'm one of those people who, when I play Revenge of Shinobi now, because I don't want to be frustrated, I play with the infinite shuriken, the 999 shuriken code.
Yeah.
This game doesn't have that, but this game is really, really generous with the shuriken. So, I mean, you still have to manage them, but you normally don't have to worry about, you know, unless you're going to spam the thing, you really don't have to worry about running out.
Whoa. Okay. So now
You about to tell me I'm wrong?
No, actually going through the instructions right now, because this is probably, read the manuals, guys. And I didn't realize there are multiple ninjutsu types. I use the invincibility the whole time.
Oh yeah. It's just like Revenge, where you have to press start and choose the different ninjutsu. That would probably have made your falling rock segment a lot easier.
No, actually, I got through that no problem.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I had some problems, but we'll talk about that in a second. So, you know, kind of going through that. Also, it's like a perfect 16-bit game in its variety of stages. Like, you're outdoors, you're in the woods, and then like 15 minutes later, you could be in a crazy laboratory with like dudes in containers being harvested or cloned, or like
brains crashing out of test tubes to attack you.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that, you know what it was completely flashing back to was Mega Turrican.
Yeah.
That's what I was like, as soon as I'm like, what am I playing, Mega Turrican?
I was having E-SWAT flashbacks personally.
Yeah. And of course you got your conveyor belts, and this is all in like round three. You're getting your conveyor belts, lots of platforming in this game, which I don't know, that was not really a trend. I've gotten through, actually, in that, what is it? The third stage of Revenge of Shinobi, where there's a lot of platforming. I feel like, and you got to have that double jump down, but I might be mistaken. It's getting late, and I'm running through these notes.
But it's real quick. Again, that's the whole reason that the jump magic is there,
right? And I wish I knew that. Sorry, I should have tutorials, guys. You got to go back and put tutorials into these old 16-bit games and re-release them. I'm just kidding. Calm down. But level diversity is a huge, huge factor in this game and a huge component of what makes it so great. Because like I said, you could be in that laboratory in the next round, you're friggin' surfing on this like.
Love the surfing ninja. Surf ninjas. Game too, but
it is, and it was a movie. And with this, you get basically like the level in Turtles in Time. Like it is a level in the Manhattan Project as well. But is your ability to surf and then attack other enemies, but making it like super fun, where there's like big ass jumps and there's like jumps that have lots of reward when you get them right because you're picking up a lot of extra life. Items and stuff like that, but like this is when like it's a game that makes a lot of sense to re-release today because of just that kind of variety helps so much to these old games to make them feel fresh and not repetitive, especially when you do run into some issues where you might need to continue quite a few times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean that I remember you sent me a picture of the end of that section where you're fighting basically a flying mech while you're on a surfboard, and I commented like that is the most 90s picture ever, but it was. I mean, they didn't bother to try for any sort of continuity between levels. It's like what's a cool setting to go to next? Oh, okay, secret lab, sure, with a bio monster at the bottom of it. Like yes, or it's absolutely.
Like, it feels like what are the developers? What movie did they watch last night? They watch Alien.
Yeah.
All right, let's do something like that. Or maybe they probably didn't watch Surf Ninjas, but they probably watched, something, or maybe they were playing Turtles in Time, and then they came, or more likely, they were probably playing Hyperstone Heist. But they would come in and say like, oh yeah, let's totally put a surfing level in, because you know what would be rad? Getting Joe on a surfboard that is, motorized, and then also have him go up against a huge mech boss at the end of the stage. Right. Makes complete sense.
And then we're going to have him hanging off an airship and
exactly.
Awesome. But we keep talking about it, but what about some of these bosses? I mean, some of these bosses were insane.
Dude, you fight a Megazord. You fight this like even like the mini bosses that aren't like the end of the rounds, but the boss in the I don't even know how to best describe this. Like I wrote down, how do you describe this? It is the, like the stage where you're in, we're actually right after the surfing section where you go into this like sewer, I guess you could call it. And you're fighting just this like gross, like mutated blob of flesh in like gross stuff that was also like previously in the stage, like locking onto you, like almost like Battletoads, like in the background, and you had to avoid its laser attacks, and then you got to fight it for real.
And it's the size of the screen. It's huge.
It's the size of the screen. And this is when I wasn't like spamming the bosses anymore. And I actually like wrote down like the bosses were frustrating at first, but it totally encourages you to learn their patterns. Like once you learn their patterns, and again, I was using my ninjutsu invincibility, like at precise points in those battles, like where I know, all right, this is going to be a really hard point where it's in its second, like second stage of the boss battle where there's going to be things that I cannot avoid. So I'm going to use that invincibility and be just able to kind of like spam attack for this section. But I actually really liked the boss battles in this game until the last two.
I also thought you were talking about the Megazord. I also thought that was actually a great callback to the Godzilla boss in Revenge of Shinobi, right? Like it feels like there's sort of a wink and a nod with that one. But yeah, I mean, some of the bosses are massive. It's so cool.
And even like, we mentioned like, surfing, but even in that level before that Megazord boss, you're in this like crazy, like, tech factory, and like the levels are broken up by like actually needing to kind of somewhat not solve puzzles, but you're actually needing to do a little bit more thinking because there's like certain places where there are bombs that you need to set off so they actually open up new areas. Open up
path. Yep. Yeah. Or like in the, when you're in that lab, there's that one section with the conveyor belt where you literally just have to deal with sort of an onslaught of those enemies and let the, glass cases hit the one spot on the floor that needs to break.
Yep.
And once you've destroyed enough, once it's had enough hits, then it disappears and you can jump down into that, that sort of bio monster section.
Like just completely new levels of, I guess, new, but so like new implementations of level design in these games, like that, even again, they're really going to encourage lots of like platforming, like really using lots of verticality where you're going to need to climb super high to get to the other edge of the end of the stage. It's not just going left to right.
One more thing I wanted to talk about with the bosses. I also love that there's basically a reimagining of the final boss of Revenge of Shinobi as it's, I think it's the second to last boss in the game. But that's pretty much the final boss of Revenge of Shinobi.
Like the ninja dudes that are going behind the wall?
Yes, with the big white hair.
Oh, that boss sucks.
Whipping their hair around. That was pretty much the final boss of the previous game.
Okay, yeah. It probably should have been of this game, judging by the... And I will preemptively say, that last stage sucks, Greg. That last stage is impossible.
Is it the maze type stage? No.
No, no, no. The maze is the stage before, or it's actually two stages before it. Then you actually go on to, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's talk about the Falling Rock stage because
this is such a cool idea for a stage, but yes.
It is, and I feel like I've seen it before, but this is the problem. You have to have mastery. And this is, again, with invincibility was huge because there's also like guys that are flying side to side on the screen that are throwing things at you. And, you know, when you get hit, you get knocked backwards. So, you know, if you're not either taking those guys out super fast, avoiding those projectiles, or you have to use invincibility to progress through that stage. But I don't know, it probably took me like seven lives to get through it. It wasn't too bad, but... Again, you just had to have strategies when it came to that stuff and have mastery of that double jump as you're in your, that would have been round four, five, six.
Yeah, by that time you would kind of hope that you do have that mastery. But again, ninjutsu magic.
Got to use it.
You can use it.
Yeah, so that wasn't too bad. And then that's when you would get into the temple with the maze, which wasn't like, you know, dude, I've been in a few ghost houses in my life. I knew how to figure it out. Like... Usually go to the hardest possible like path.
That's where you need to go.
That's where you need to go. Like I've done it, you know, multiple times in Super Mario Brothers games. But all right, so I got to that boss battle and I died over and again, I was still at the DMV. That shows you how long I was waiting for my license fighting this boss over and over and over again. I just couldn't figure out a way to beat this boss. Like I just couldn't avoid the projectiles, like his hair. Like I couldn't find like a good pattern that lined up until again, I went on YouTube and on my phone and I discovered that you could block. I didn't know you could block in this game.
Yes.
Until then. And then I learned to block and the boss battle became somewhat manageable, still frustrating, but I got lucky in some of the patterns and was able to beat that boss. But, you know, again, it's like one of those things where, what do you do? Like if you rent this game at a rental store back in the day and it doesn't have the instruction booklets, because like, remember companies were getting pissed off about that.
Yeah. Well, that was the big loophole, right? That Nintendo especially went through where it was like, well, there's nothing illegal about renting the game, but technically because a lot of rental companies would photocopy the instructions, that's copyrighted material. You were distributing photocopied copyrighted material, and that they made that a no-no.
I forget who it was. It might have been on like your show, A4 Play, or maybe it was somewhere else, but stories of people that worked at rental stores like just making their own manuals for those games. Yep.
There was a whole company, or maybe multiple companies, that actually existed that way, where you would get the plastic. They were like stickers or overlays that we put inside the plastic cases that literally had an overview of what the controls were.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah.
So after you get through that stage, which is like the maze, that's when you get to the well, I guess it was like an airship or a blimp or something like that. But yes. That was like way easier than that temple was a huge pain in the ass. And then like it, they kind of give you a little bit of a break, as you go through that stage. And, again, more elevator stuff, you know, second elevator stage, maybe we're milking that a little bit too much, but it was actually really easy. It's just like, there's like guns shooting at you from the sides and it's super easy to take those out. But then you get to that final stage and there's just like, there's lasers all over the place, like above and below you. You got to get the jumps down perfectly. You got to have the double jumps down perfectly. You have to have the double jump with the wall jump down perfectly. Otherwise, you fall to your death. And I was just like, nah, I can't do this. And I even like tried doing it with my save states. Like as soon as I got to a section, I was eventually making my way through. And I was like, no, it's too hard.
There's one point in the very end of that where there's these very thin pillars that you have to jump to, and they descend when you land on them.
Yeah, they're
and,
like, super you small. Have to wait.
Yeah, yeah, it gets tough. But I mean, you know what? At that point, the game has earned it. I mean, you know, you are in the final stage of this game. Because you got to remember, these games, like if you played from start to finish, in a lot of these games from the '90s, you're talking about an hour or less of time spent, and games were still expensive back then. So, I mean, this was how they made them worthwhile, is they made them difficult.
Oh, man, this is...
and rental was a big problem, too. I mean, there's been, like, Ed Annunziata, who did the Echo games, mm-hmm. he has come out and said on a lot of his games, because he's known for making really difficult games, and that is one of the main reasons why, because they didn't want people to be able to beat the game in a single night rental.
No, that makes total sense, and that's why... you know, every game should be a 60-hour RPG.
Jesus.
Dude, you'd play Echo RPG today. You would totally play that.
I heard recently that Annunziata actually got the rights to Echo back from Sega.
But for like $1?
I have no idea, but I'm excited.
Crisp dollar bill. Yeah, Echo the Dolphin RPG Kickstarter with Rabbids coming.
I am there with my $100.
$100. All right, so yeah, that's Shinobi 3, and I know it's like people are going to be listening, be like, dude, you should have done Revenge first, but as I mentioned at the start of the show, it's actually been like a crazy couple weeks, and I just wanted something to play on my 3DS while I was at the DMV and while I was running back and forth doing a lot of stuff, and this was the right game to do, and we haven't done a lot of Genesis love lately. I can't remember the last Genesis game that we did on the show.
No matter how much you've done, it's not enough.
I know, but I got my list, man. I got my list of really great Genesis games that we can still do. And also, like, to be honest, like, one of the considerations that I make when I decide to do an episode is, like, can the audience, get this? Like, can they go and readily play this game without having to go through, like, downloading stuff or anything like that? I think there is some benefit to just being, like, yeah, you got a 3DS, go on the eShop right now and drop $6 on it, and you're going to get... every penny out of that $6, even if you just hang out and listen to the music in the option screen.
God. Yeah. Okay. One of the things that I wanted to talk about real quick though, cause it sounds like you're starting to wrap up, but, so playing this game, I remember this game being awesome back in the day, but I had forgotten exactly how great this game really feels and looks, especially.
It plays way better than Revenge of Shinobi. I know it's a great game, but
no, you're right. Like, it holds
the controls
up
are so much better.
Yeah, it holds up better. But one of the things that I didn't realize, and it really struck me while I was playing it, is, like I mentioned in the previous segment, you know, this really sits alongside things like Rocket Knight Adventures and Contra Hardcore and Gunstar totally. Heroes. And one of the things that all those games really have in common, along with this game, is the visuals and some of the things they're doing with the hardware doesn't seem like you should really be able to do it on the Genesis, right? Like, the Genesis was a great piece of hardware, and of course, by this time it was 4 years old, and you know, the best coders were really finding ways to stretch it and make it do amazing things. And one of the companies that was really great at that was Konami was great at it. Treasure. Which was a splinter, basically, of Konami, as far as I remember, was great at it, as Gunstar Heroes, which also came out in 93, showed. So as I was doing research on this after I played the game and sort of, you know, having that sort of itching in the back of my brain. It's like, this really feels similar to a lot of this Konami stuff and this Treasure stuff. I remembered that the Sega Mega Drive Genesis Collected Works book that came out a couple years ago from Read Only Memory that I was lucky enough to contribute to had some interviews about Shinobi 3. So I went back and read them, and there was an interview with the director, Tomoyuki Ito. And one of the things that I found really interesting, he was talking about, again, how gutsy Sega was to take a game that was pretty much done and say, nope, it's not good enough. Let's go back and rework the entire thing, which is one of the things that he was there to do. And he was talking about influences. Clearly, of course, Revenge of Shinobi was an influence because this was the follow-up, which we haven't really discussed that timeline yet. But he also mentioned that that team was making a bare knuckle game at the time. So they were really advising, and that was about it. Megasoft, though, that we mentioned in the previous segment, which was the developer that was eventually folded into Nintendo or into Sega. Sega bought them. They happened, which I love this, they happened to be in the same building as Treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And Treasure actually advised on Shinobi 3.
Wow.
Members of Treasure actually advised on Shinobi 3, and he credits them with a lot of the effects. He credits them in particular with the being able to make the horse and surfing stages move so quickly and look so great.
But Treasure was not a – I mean, there were third parties. So this kind of goes against the, I guess, trend of the day and even almost to this day.
They were
third
party, but they were closely linked with Sega because they were working on Gunstar Heroes at the time, and that was a Sega game. Sega was funding that game.
Right. So, I mean, I'm just curious because usually there was a history of not sharing development practices and, mm-hmm. you know, secrets of how we were able to do, you know, these graphical effects in a game. So it just seems to go against the trend of that day.
Yeah. But anyway, I just thought that was really cool. It's like, oh, of course they did. It's because there's a lot of the same techniques that you see across both of those games. And to see that they've got a sort of a shared DNA was just really awesome, I thought.
It's cool to be in this, in the present day where we're almost seeing like another resurgence of Japanese game development, which is just so, like the next couple months, exciting. It's just so many Japanese game releases. Mm-hmm. And again, like I think part of it is, you know, there was a little bit of an abrupt, you know, stoppage and delay of things during the earthquake and stuff like that, and the tsunami, obviously. But it's just so great to see because, like, if we play old video games, we mostly grew up on Japanese video games.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the most part, and of course, you know, there was EA, there was, you know, Virgin, you know, putting out some hot games. But for the most part, like, we were playing these games from these Japanese game developers. And it's just, it's so great to see that style being not only so successful, but being so strong in the current lineup of video games, of course, on PlayStation 4, but also, you know, Nintendo showing that there's still plenty at EAD, they got plenty left in the tank and just some great young talent there ready to deliver some fantastic games that just have that awesome Japanese style to it.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about games right now. So
you're always excited about games. That's one of the best parts about this show.
I am, especially after I, you know, just did 2 hours of podcasting before talking to you for another 90 minutes about Shinobi, and my voice is getting to disappear. So, I think that's where we will probably pause it. We will talk about timelines, but I think we should save timelines until we do Revenge of Shinobi and Shinobi 2. Maybe we can make that as one episode, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe we'll do those soon, but the unfortunate case of those games is that they're not available on the 3DS 3D Classic Collection, which I think is, like, literally for all those games, it's the best way to play those games. Like, want to play Gunstar Heroes? You should play it on your 3DS, even if you don't turn the 3D on. It's just, the games look fantastic. They run great, and all the options that they provide are welcome. Also, Sega.com on their blog has tons of great interviews about these games with the 3D Classics that came out, so those are worth giving a look as well. But, you know, I'm looking right now at my Genesis. It's getting what's the right word for it? It's getting slammed in the side by a Sega CD. But I can.
Yeah, when are we going to do some Sega CD stuff, man?
That's a good question. See, the problem is finding good Sega CD games that are like.
See, it's the season of Snatcher. You got to grab. You got to grab your buddy from Hardcore Gaming 101. Get me on the show. Let's talk some Snatcher.
We should, but I think that game is so ready for a re-release.
Yeah, but it's never going to happen. So.
It's never going to happen, but I don't know. It's just weird. Playing a Sega CD game in 2017 is just so weird.
Amazing.
It's good. I played the first hour of that game. It's pretty good. All right. Well, we're gonna end there. I will mention that if you're a Patreon supporter, stick around because we got a meaty 30-minute discussion for you coming up in just a second. If you do enjoy this show, like I said, it means more now than ever if you do want to support the show at patreon.com/backofmyplay or go to backofmyplay.com or fitcast.network. You can set up a one-time or a monthly donation via PayPal. And if you do the monthly donation thing via PayPal I think the monthly donation via PayPal, I'll get you access to all the Patreon exclusive content as well and the Patreon feed for all that. But yeah, it means so much. And hopefully you guys really believe in the content that not only I'm producing, but also what Greg is doing over at Generation 16. And of course, the guys at Player One Podcast, you guys have been doing that show for like 2 or 3 years now. So it's something good to like keep that. It going. What do you have 500 episodes, right? Just 520?
We're at like 520 something, and we're just past the 10-year mark a few weeks back.
That's right. That would make sense. 502, okay. Go check all that stuff out, generation-16.com.
Yes, sir.
And at SEWART on Twitter and social media. You don't do Instagram. You're going to try to do Instagram, right?
I'm on Instagram now.
Okay. Take some pictures of some Genesis stuff. You'll get a lot of followers.
I should
fast.
Do that. Yeah, I got a lot of 16-bit hardware around here.
I would just like game cases and say something about that game. And that will also help you promote Generation 16. But anyways, yeah, check all that stuff out. PlayerOnePodcast.com. And again, thank you so much. Make sure that you're keeping an eye out on what is going on backofmyplay.com because there are some regular next-gen episodes on there too. And like I said, more video content will be coming as soon as probably not the time that you hear this, but within the next week, you'll see some more video content at youtube.com/fitcastnetwork or just go to backofmyplay.com to watch it directly on the site. So we're going to wrap up there. Here's some more music from Shinobi 3 / Super. I think Super Shinobi 2 sounds way better.
I agree.
Okay. And the box art's better. All right. Take care. We'll see you next time. Bye.